We will begin now. Hi, I'm Jim Bertolino. Good to see you. And I'll be the process will be I will read the names of the winning poets, and they will come up, and they will be invited to read aloud their poem. They know this, of course, and then. One of the judges will hand them a free copy of this volume, this wonderful volume. And, of course, I should also note that in those back tables, there's a copy of each of the winning poems done up in a large color placard. And so at the end of the program, the poets are encouraged to go find theirs and grab it. Take it home, okay? And also, please, once we start, stay in your seats, unless you have an accident, you know, and then after we're done with the program, then again, help yourself to the treats and the drinks, okay, the coffee and stuff. Because there will be food left. You'll check it out. And, well, to get started, I would like to tell you a little bit about Jan Crook Pearson, who is known as Calamity Jan to her fans. She herself is a prolific mystery writer and Western history buff. Her four Ghost Towners books are part of a history mystery series for middle grade readers, with a story based on a well-known legend of Bodie, California. The Sue C. Boynton Poetry Contest, named for Jan's grandmother, is extremely grateful for the continued support of Jan and the many members of the extended Boynton family. So, Jan, please come up here and have a few words with us.
I didn't even pay him to do that. Thank you all, and thank you, Jim, and the committee, everyone who has worked so hard. And I am just honored to be here because my grandmother was probably the dearest person in my life, and Sue Boynton was part of my heart. And maybe the reason I went on to become a writer is because of some of the genes she gave to me. She was an amateur poet. She didn't plan and didn't head toward the studies that would make her great, and she didn't seek awards. But she poured her heart out on paper, as so many of you tonight have been doing. And I am so glad to be here to honor you who are winners tonight because of your efforts, because of your gifts, and because of the dreams of your future, as well as mine. Grandma Sue came here in 1906 with my grandfather, an early doctor, Solon Richard Boynton. It was called New Whatcom, wasn't Bellingham yet, and they couldn't even get here by train, so they came across from the East Coast to Seattle and up by steamer. My little grandma was about my size. I could even fit into her wedding dress. And she, when she walked up the boardwalk of Old Town, which was the new town, amidst the saloons and the houses of prostitution and every other such thing that was simply whirling around her because it was a storm that night, and she had her ostrich feather hat on, and she was terrified and wondered what she had gotten into and what this man who had married her had brought her into. But she soon adjusted and adapted, and later in the early 1900s was climbing Mount Baker, accomplishing so many things because she was a wonderful woman. My mother was their oldest child, Ethel Crook. Some of you might have known Ethel Crook and her involvement in the arts as well, the symphony. So I guess we all have within us these gifts. It's so wonderful to share them. Tonight you've been doing that. My grandmother did that. And because of her, I'm here tonight. And I get to do that with my writing for young readers. And I think that the future is very exciting for those of us who are taking hold of our dreams and giving to others part of that dream, because it can change a life. Tonight, someone said to me, I have talked to a woman who said that your grandmother's book of poetry literally changed her life. And I thought to myself, how beautiful. And if Grandma Sue could be here, she would just have a puddle of tears running down her cheeks tonight because she'd be so happy. Well, she is here in a way because I'm here. And so I'm really honored and glad to be here and to let you know that Susie Boynton is not just a name above an entry, but it's a woman who lives on. And your words will live on. I want to share the poem I share every year, and some of you are going to be so tired of it. But then a year is a good wait, isn't it, Jim? Year is a good wait. And then I'll stop. And she wrote these words when she was in her 70s, as I'm in my 70s, so I understand and relate so much to her. She was about my age when she wrote these words. This business of growing old bothered me once when I was 55. But now, at 80 years, plus 5, all fears concerning age have gone, and I'm just glad to be alive. To be alive and find upon the table of each new day a brimming cup, a challenge to go on. So I've stopped growing old, too busy growing up. Thank you.
And before I introduce our stellar judges, a couple of things I'd like to mention. The beautiful poetry placards, which will be spending the year on the buses and then making the rounds, I believe, of the Whatcom County Libraries. Is that correct? Anyway, they'll be on the buses, that's for sure. And I should note that they were designed by Anita Boyle and her Anita Boyle at Egress Studio Press, and Anita herself is a very well-published and highly respected local and regional poet. So she's the right person for the job. And well, what I'm going to do then, also I should mention that on your program, there is a list, I think near the bottom or somewhere, of all the people that have donated money and other ways helped to keep the Boynton contest going. You should, when you have a chance, look at those names. Familiarize yourself with those wonderful people. I'm going to introduce each of the judges. And when I introduce them, then they will come up and speak for a while about the experience of judging the contest. And then we will begin hearing the poets themselves. And I will make an attempt to adjust the microphone to height, okay? Because I know some of our poets are going to be kind of short and some tall. Okay, we're good with that? All right, well, I want to start with Betty Scott, who I am happy to proud to claim as one of my former students. Betty began writing columns for the Wenatchee World. She has a BA from UCLA a teaching certificate from Central Washington University, and a master's in creative writing from Western Washington University. As a mom, she put her writing on hold. 3 years ago, she returned to it. She's been featured in the first and second World Poetry Festivals in Richmond, Canada, and is an award winner at the Surrey International Writers Conference. She teaches at Bellingham Technical College and at Whatcom Community College. Here is Betty Scott.
Well, it's great to see everybody here tonight. Thank you so much to the Sue Boynton Committee and to the donors who make all of this possible. That's what it takes to celebrate poetry and poets in our community. And I believe I speak for hundreds when I say we are grateful. In 2009, I returned to writing poetry, and that year I dusted off a poem I'd written years earlier, and I submitted it to the Sue Boynton contest. In the spring, I received a handwritten note from Joan Packer. She wrote, "Thank you for sending your lovely poem to our Whatcom County contest. As a member of the committee that sponsors it, I always look forward to reading our entries. This year, your poem was one of my very favorites." She had underlined the word very. I taped her note to my computer screen, and it buoyed me for a year. Now when I receive those mass-produced rejection slips with nary a drop of ink from a human hand, I remember Joan's note and my first encouraging rejection letter. So this year, when I was asked to be a judge, of course I said yes. The Sue Boynton Committee had me at their first rejection. You may be wondering what it is really like to read hundreds of poems in 1 week. It's involving. I won't exaggerate. It takes energy and a lot of fuel. In fact, I've written a limerick about it. It's titled, "In Case You Were Wondering." And in the poem, I quote Jeff, and Jeff is Jeff Morgan, the co-judge, who you'll meet in just a moment. "In case you were wondering, we read your poems over coffee, we read them over tea, we read them with eggs between waking and sleep, we read them at noon, we read them as soon as we cleaned off our glasses, wiped crumbs from our spoons, we read them at dinner, we read them with rum. Jeff says poems go so well with liquor and Tums. And do rest assured, in case you were wondering, we read poems at least twice, and none went wandering. Jeff says it's a miracle no ballots or sonnets went awry, flushing themselves down toilets while we ate more pie. Yes, for a week we swallowed the sweet with the bitter. We digested your narratives, free verses, and lyrics. And in case you were wondering, we gained belly ham pounds for your Epicurean poems to travel and nourish our town."
Thank you, Betty. Our other judge is Jeffrey Morgan, whose father's a friend of mine, and who spent part of his life in Alaska. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Where's the harm there? Jeffrey is the author of Crying Shame, published by Blaze Box Books in 2011. A native of Fairbanks, Alaska, Jeffrey's received a BA in English from McAllister College and an MFA from Penn State University. Although he has fallen in love with Bellingham, Washington, his sabbatical is nearly over, and in the fall, he will return to New York City, his other love and the borough of Manhattan Community College, where he teaches. There's Jeffrey Morgan.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me now? You have to get close. I would like to thank the Sue Boynton Poetry Committee very much for thinking of me and including me in this process. Sort of interesting for me being maybe an honorary member of this community for a year to be able to participate in something like this. It really allows me to feel sort of more included and sort of a unique situation when you're participating in a poetry contest from that perspective. I'm sort of hoping everybody likes me. And then I have all these poems, and how can I make everybody like me? I'll say also that I think that maybe one of the natural questions for a judge that I would always want to ask a judge before I ever started judging poetry contests or participating in them from any other point of view other than rejected is how does that work? What do you do? How do you justify what you do? And I think the simple answer is, we don't. It's important to have, I think, a very strong opinion about what you like as a judge, what you choose, and then also have a very strong sense that that's just my opinion. But I very much enjoyed spending time with the poems from this community, getting a sense of this community, which obviously is sort of very vibrant and wonderful. And I want to thank you for allowing me to participate in that.
Thanks, Jeff. Oh, see the judges. Very good. Imagine the judges being obscured by books. Oh. Well then, and I should mention also, most of you know this, but the Merit Awards and the Walk Awards, all of these poets have placards done of their poems, designed and printed of their poems. The Walk Awards also will have a plaque installed on a towel, pedestal. It sounds like part of a flower. Anyway, on a pedestal in front of the public library downtown. And it's a wonderful thing. I've gone by there many times and gone into the library on occasion as well, and have seen people standing in front of those pedestals reading the poems. And I always see somebody stopping and reading those poems. It's a great place to have your poem. Okay. Also, I should say in advance that this wonderful list of poets here is exotic not only for the fact that these are the names of poets, but also because the names themselves are very interesting, And I will do my best to pronounce them correctly, but if I don't, I'll at least try to give them some flair, Okay, so and when I call the poet, please come to the podium, and your poem will be here. And we'll ask you to read out loud. I will give the name and of your name and the title of the poem. But also, as I see you approaching, I'll probably turn the mic up or down depending on how tall you are, right? Okay, and it's good to get close to the mic, especially if you don't have a big voice. Isn't that right? Lift it. Oh, thank you, Denise. Like that? But what if the next person is very short? Put it down. Okay. Thank you. All right. Well, our first poet is Thea Rosenberg. Please come to the front.
My poem is called Munchers. That's okay. I got it covered. We call them munchers, those backhoes, like long-necked brachiosaurus, rummaging through the rubble with their snouts. They're taking it down, the paper plant that stood here my whole lifetime, like a guard between the water and the town. The munchers work gently for machines, unstitching the brickwork piece by piece, knee-deep in the dust and the debris. When we drive by, my daughter cries, "Mama, the munchers are working," and through a gap in the brick, a rupture, I see the sky. Thank you.
How could I miss the opportunity to say a title like Munchers? God. Okay, next up we've got Andrew Shattuck McBride.
Thank you. Grace. After nightfall, an anonymous sculptor and helpers install a statue below a Fairhaven bluff. As platform, they choose the jagged tin boulder surrounded by water at high tide. They balance the statue perfectly on one foot and bolt it into older metal. The artist calls the statue Grace. She points one arm to sea, trails the other to meet leg curling up behind her. Formed of silver bands wrapped around steel core and heart, she's untempered and pure. Grace is silvery fine and fair, and appears to be a dancer. Her stomach is taut, her limbs long muscled and lean. A friend tells me Grace is in a standing bow pose or dancer's pose. To me, she seems prepared to leap or soar. While Grace is lithe and limber, she is caressed by salt water and air, and her carbon steel is in certain decline. When the sculptor returns and takes her from us, he will leave this artistry. However we choose to picture or embody Grace, in repose or as a dancer prepared to soar or leap, reclining or as an elder walking with quiet dignity, we rediscover Grace. Grace resides in us and remains available always. Thank you.
Next up, Ali Morrow, an eighth grader, who wrote a poem entitled Where I Am From. Ali?
A craggy cliff of blankets, a skyscraper of novels on my bedside table. The sharp angles of my room rounded by pastels. A big bin of discarded pungent clothes. A white rose. A raggedy enormous bunny. A fuzzy warm red blanket. A Grand Canyon sleeping bag warming me like hot cocoa on the early morning drives to Mount Baker. A soccer ball soaring through the crisp air. A bend in the river perfect for swimming. The powder flying behind me as I carve through the snow. A basketball swishing through the net. lemon gelato in the Cinque Terre, chorizo and pasta in a seaside cabin, blueberry cheesecake on a little island called Canoe, potatoes and eggs in a rainy town on the Isle of Crete, an espresso shake from my mom, like a frothy hug in between soccer practices, a giant apple tree supporting swings and memories, supplying pies brimming with sugar and friendship, providing a perfect perch for planting or growing a friend.
And with each of these books, these collections of poetry by Susie Boynton, is a certificate that's addressed to that particular poet, suitable for framing. Our next poet is John A. Orvik, and his poem is entitled Small Things. John?
Small things. I'm sure something like this has happened to you. Walking on a trail, you stop and see a flower, so impossibly tiny, and yet the mirror of something you recognize. Something much larger, and the mind wonders how. One large, the other small, yet the same. I am amazed more by the pinhead replica of a lily than by the familiar variety. Something to do with the wonder of what is behind it all. The minuscule recedes to vanishing, a point beyond our knowledge. But we do have clues, don't we? Science with a double helix. Imagine those strings uncoiling, reaching out to others to form something new. Diotima taught Socrates not to be seduced by the beauty of things that are but the semblance of beauty itself, a beauty we never fully know, but can marvel at its semblance here on a dusty trail.
It's interesting that I'm currently reading a volume of essays that is illustrated with some stained glass window art by certain Orviks. Yeah. Very nice. We'll continue on then. Next up, we've got Maria Frazee, and she will be reading Ode to Cats.
Ode to Cats. Small and furry, with whiskers and claws. Cats are the cutest of creatures. My cat is black, with pumpkins for eyes, and purrs like the engine of a car. Her small feet pat on the ground when she hears me call. At night she sleeps by my feet, a warm cat on my toes. My brother has a cat. She is black and white, like an old photograph. Across the street there is a kitten. It likes to hide under the car. It is black, like my cat, and runs from the neighborhood children. There are many other cats around here, some gray, some spotted, some orange, some black as night. They meow, they purr, they hiss. Sometimes, when I am walking down the street, I see a cat darting under a bush or sitting on a fence. I see cats in windows of houses or hunting for mice. Sometimes a cat will walk up to me, begging to be petted. I stroke its soft fur. It looks up at me and mews. Cats are my favorite animals because of their cute eyes and small paws and curvy tails.
And I forgot to mention that Maria is in sixth grade. Pretty darn good for sixth grade, I'll tell you. Our next poet is in fifth grade, and the name is Finnegan Cooper. And the poem is entitled Asperger's.
I have Asperger's. Whoa. I have Asperger's, as you can see, and most of you don't get life to me. I hate it when people yell all around. My brain can't compute all of the sound. All brains spark, but mine gets on fire when you tell jokes that are not in desire. It unlocks memories of things that are sad. I really can't help it if you think I'm bad. Brains are like highways, and thoughts are like cars, but they go straight like most of ours. But my highway has stops and smaller roads attached. So my thoughts pick up more thoughts, and some more thoughts are latched. My brain records movies, pictures, and shows. I even record movies of my very own. I plan things in my head when I run around. Sometimes I even watch them in real life sound. Sometimes Asperger's can be such a pain, but my life is nowhere done. I have much to gain.
Our next poet is Ella Denham Conroy, and Ella is an eighth grade poet, and she will be reading Midnight Walk in the Golden Gate City.
As soon as the fiery orange ball disappears beneath the aquatic line of cerulean, as the Golden Gate shifts from glowing bronze to blazing lights. After the smells of garlic, sautéed shrimp, spicy salsa, and fortune cookies drift away, while the hours of darkness extend, my footsteps become part of the hubbub of urban night, and my senses awaken. When I stride deeper into the city, approaching the edge, where the melodic buzz and hum, scream and screech of traffic begin to fade, until silhouettes of Victorians loom overhead and eucalyptus leaves crunch underfoot. Around the time as distant sea breeze caresses my face with briny fingers, I pause, inhale the city, and slide the key into the ornate wrought iron gate.
Our next poet is Denise du Maurier, and her poem is entitled Midnight Mission.
Midnight Mission. Fairhaven Docks, Bellingham, Washington. The cranes hang over a tired prow, ready for repairs of damages sustained, protecting the homeland from shrouded rocks, sea stacks in black furcas armed with razor clams. Containers jammed with guns and butter, slabs of ironside shore up her underside. One man each to gear the cranes, eight frogmen with headlamps and flippers. Quite a tank, this shop in Puget Gray, with tinker toy spools for weather radar. Custom-built sniff-out drugs and immigrants in skiffs. Train her Klieg lights, let her cables down to winch her into pose. Keep the Coast Guard vigilant. Bony and slow, her hoists rise in the steam at Stony End. Suspend their cables in the drizzle. Great pulleys dangle into silence. No one here saw this ship come in. And we won't say. Only the cranes will watch her float away.
And here we are in Bellingham, in this gorgeous terminal. Look at these lights. My God. They make me hungry. Our next poet is Don Kramer, and Don will be reading My Ladder.
My ladder. An aluminum ladder hangs on the wall outside my shop. Extended, it's nearly as long as the building. Smoke blue paint spots adorn its upper steps. Flakes left after painting the house 3 summers ago. Remnants of needles have nestled into the treads, left over from the annual cleaning of the gutters. When I tried to lower a dangling widowmaker, it fell and bent the ladder's bottom rung. Credit the manufacturer. The rung did not break. Credit my preparation. The ladder stayed tied to the tree. Annually, I brace this ladder at the angle of the roof, then carry shingles to patch it before the rains. I take it on junkets to help neighbors harvest apples. Its neck sticks out and waves a big red bandana. I gauge my stability depends on how well I plant the ladder. I gauge my stamina by how much vertigo I experience. I am handing this marvelous tool over to my grandson. It can get him from down there to up there and back again.
Our next poet is Wendy McLeod. She will be reading Tennant Lake Park Rules.
Audubon Marsh Boys on spring break, twig fish without line or flies for bubbling creek turtles, but none would snap at hope alone. Darting the zigzag boardwalk, their ears blushed, rustier than the moss spores bumpering the deck corners. While slowed to dribble and plunk every flat stone, I watched the water spiders surf the ripples. Finches called them cheaters, and so they filched a scrap with them, tossing crisps and chatter back into the bushes. The pair snapped up cattails and raced for the highest banner of seed. Soaring over the field, the ranger spotted them and cooped their flights back onto gravel, their wildlife having a boundary of its own.
Our next poet is Jacob Hartsock, and his poem is entitled Saving Power Creek.
Saving Power Creek. I found you here, flush with mud, twisted over your shovel in silence, the headwaters choked in silt. Dig, you said, and shoulder to shoulder we learned about each other until after dusk the sound came back, metallic whir through culverts, a sparkle in your ear. My boys should know of this, I think. When the spawning starts, we come again, work down through the drainage, slant light popping through alders. You kneel down next to a discarded row, put a single egg in my son's tiny hand, pink on pink. Further down, we spot the coho, taller than the flow, skittering upstream, the boys dancing in rubber boots.
Our next poet is Nicola Morrow. She's an 11th grader, and she will be reading Ode to Potato Chip.
I'm not actually an 11th grader. Nicola was unable to be here, so I will read this for her. Ode to Potato Chip. Trapped in stifling plastic packaging, waiting to be born with a quiet gasp and a rush of air. Vinegar stings your nose, navigating both canals until its acrid scent has stroked each fine hair within reach. And then the salt-coated fingers licked raw after each ballistic cycle of frantic crunching. The grotesque ecstasy of blistering tongue and wet, greasy lips. And then the crushing dismay when you reach for one more and your fingers slip helplessly in circles on the slick foil of the bottom of the bag.
Oh, boy. But there's something about this environment. I just can't get over it. It's like hearing poetry read in an environment like this gives it the poetry its proper stature, don't you think? It's just gorgeous here. And it's sunny. Oh, man. Okay. Our next poet is Elizabeth Vignali or Vignali, and she will be reading My Mother's Afterlife.
She prepares for our arrival, brushes pine needles off the table, unfurls the checkered cloth with a snap of her wrist, Morning doves hush as she stacks clacking kindling next to the fire pit, dead with ashes. When she ceases, they cry to each other across the shrouding mist. She sets out canvas camping chairs and rests in the one nearest the pond. She has years to wait. A nymph lumbers from under the verdant surface onto a cow lily and dances into its dragonfly shape. New wings unfurled, it sees her with many eyes. It clings to the old body, its pale new one jeweling blue-green.
Our next poet is George Such, who will be reading Snorkeling with My Daughter at Giliare. I don't know.
Giliare. Giliare is a small island in Indonesia. Snorkeling with my daughter at Giliare. Okay. Still, okay. This moment, alive in the ocean's mouth, watch the world reveal itself. Emperor angelfish chase their prey, their blue-striped yellow bodies flash. Behind black-sashed faces, Moorish idols, chisel-toothed wrasses, their sides like green comb filled with honey. Sweet lips, snappers, groupers, puffers, butterfly fish with stripes that go straight through. But you don't need to know their names. All you need to do is breathe and see. Eyes that swim close and wonder. Pink lips, silky fins, tails that drive the ubiquitous body.
So, what am I seeing on the walls over there? Are those poems? No joke. Wow, that's brilliant. All right then, our next poet is Carly Ethorn, and her poem is entitled Caddisfly Larvae. Carly.
Still young, wiggling, tickling the toes of fish if they had them, I am camouflaged in riverbeds, a speck among the reeds and rocks. I spin my silk, my glorious goop, and draw to me a few new friends, a chip of stone, fallen tendons of bark, the ghostly skin of an old passing leaf. They become my armor, and I become a dull brown knight, a twig's twin, safe from beak or bite.
Wow, what wonderful poetry.